Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we need to, you know, continue covering these topics, the content that actually lays the truth. What is the black and white foundational truth of our government? What are the real laws? What are the legitimate laws? How do they become legitimate laws? All of these things are essential. And I can't, you know, I just had a conversation yesterday or 2 days ago where I was talking to a young man, and I go, I don't care what your political affiliation is, because I'm not going to grab anybody and drag them out in the streets. You know, if you support homosexual marriage, I'm not going to drag you out of the street and stone you. You know, everybody has their rights for their paradigms, but in America, the only paradigm that you have to possess is one that supports the Constitution of the United States, period. And so this kid kind of, you know, admitted that you can consider me a liberal, but not a leftist. So I already knew where this kid was. And I believe the kid, and it really became obvious that he was very uncomfortable in living under the rule of law. He kind of liked, you know, a democracy and allowing people to live under the rule that they want, and letting, and these idiots have no idea. I deal with this in social media. This was a one-on-one conversation over the phone when I was dealing with, you know, buying something from somebody, and these people have no idea the danger that they're embracing in allowing a mob rule for America to shift into a mob rule nation. Folks, believe it or not, we're kind of there. There's only every once in a while the Supreme Court will actually cling to, okay, hold on here, the rule of law applies. But they're the worst. I mean, they're the ones that attack it the worst. And this is one of the reasons why the liberals love the court, because the court is creating law that supports the liberal narrative and agenda. So every once in a while, this is why we go through this, so that as we continue, you know, Lord, what do we need to do? As we continue to, you know, call upon heaven for help and so forth, understanding certain things is very critical. Very rarely, and just welcome back, Sean. I don't remember. You remember we talked about the militia. We dove into the militia topic and kind of sidelined the content for the day. And I think we had another conversation that was very similar to that. Do you know what the topic was on that one? Because it eludes me at this point.
I think it was about transitioning the police departments into the militia.
Oh, so it was kind of like a part two. Okay, so it was a kind of a part two of the militia then. Okay. I thought we had a different topic that we went down, but that's okay. That's okay. And folks, if the generic labeling for the Constitution, the notes on the Constitutional Convention, is a little frustrating, make your own little notes, because we're just so busy right now that I have not been able to go in to kind of listen. And I need to, because I do want to highlight very specific things, because that militia conversation, I think, is very, very important. And so why is GR saying this? Why are we, you know, not moving forward? Because I do want to move forward in content. But and I think we've talked about citizenship. I think we've gone down the path and talked about this importance of citizenship. And more importantly, every citizen has a moral, not just a moral, but a legal obligation to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. That is the oath of a citizen, and that is the implied oath upon every person born with the birthright. The framers were pretty, I'll say it.
they were definitely inspired, because what they gave us by creating that hard, fast, affixed devotion and loyalty to the Constitution, and the Constitution alone clarifies that, you know, if our affiliation puts party over the Constitution, then maybe you should lose your citizenship, because that means that you're literally in the position of supporting a mechanism of undermining the Constitution. And if you are in the process, I mean, clearly the Democrats are out there doing things. They're out there violating the law. I mean, these are the leftists, even the liberals. They're all kind of agreeing that we got to stop the rule of law. We've got to stop this nation from, you know, protecting everybody's rights. We only want our rights protected. I mean, this is the hypocrisy that we deal with. This is the, it's almost like, I guess there's a word for it. It's a sociopath. They just have no idea, you know, just how wrong and how immoral and how void of morality that they have and they possess. And as a matter of fact, I think I forget where I learned this specifically, but it's an old saying that when people have that kind of paradigm, it doesn't matter the moral cost. It doesn't matter, you know, what the wake, what the destruction and the damage that comes out of the wake. The ends justify the means. In other words, their goal is far more important than anybody dying and any destruction and so forth. That type of paradigm is one of those paradigms that creates this what one would call a pyrrhus victory. I'm probably mispronouncing it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Pyrrhic.
Pyrrhus?
Pyrrhic.
Pyrrhic, thank you. Thank right. you. A Pyrrhic victory. And so what is a Pyrrhic victory?
Well, let's get an official version.
Okay, so a Pyrrhic victory in GR's sense is where you're engaged in warfare with an enemy that costs you and them ultimately everything. In other words, you win, but you have nothing to be able to seize to basically take the bounties of your winning. I mean, you're basically equally paralyzed as they are. You've both destroyed yourselves.
Right. They'd rather rule over ashes.
Yep, that's it. And so that's the paradigm of these people that believe the ends justify the means. Doesn't matter the cost, doesn't matter what we have to do, as long as at the end we have control. And so it doesn't, you know, they're just hoping that they have a little control, not, you know, no control at all, but with the win in their column. Anyway, so we, Sean and I, started talking, and we couldn't get the show started on the content because Sean was bringing up points that I think most people are looking, and anybody that listens to the show, maybe you need some help connecting the dots. Maybe there's these underlying questions on the significance of citizenship, the significance of immigration, the significance of the federal government not having control, but they do have the responsibility of executing the law. And actually, the president, that's his job, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. He's supposed to faithfully execute the law, the supreme law of the land, and to make sure it's done right. So when the framers, as they created this new constitution and they started populating the federal government, what was the first act, the very first act that the framers did? Do you remember? No. The Tory Acts were, you know, as the states were organizing, or the colonies were organizing and petitioning the king, they, you know, unified to create a single petition to the king and signal to the king that they were standing up for their rights and they were pushing back. And that's when the king said, okay, we're going to war. Yeah, go ahead.
Would it be the Alien and Sedition Acts?
No. Okay, so no, there's a. It's okay. The very first act that Congress passed, the first thing that they had to make sure that they had it right was the act of administering the oath of office. Because they realized that that was the most important thing that they had to do. And at that point in time, anybody that was receiving money from the government as an employee working over in the general accounting office, and literally the guys are buying pencils and handing out supplies and so forth, they had to take an oath. People working in the mint had to take an oath. And as a matter of fact, when they realized that they were going to have, you know, people managing money, they required those employees to actually have a bond. And so when we understand what they were doing and what they were laying out in the very beginning of forming this constitutional republic, they were literally getting the most important things right first. They had to define what a citizen was. They had to define what a natural-born citizen was. They had to literally lay out these fundamental definitions that literally have stood to this day. Now, there have been attacks on the oath of citizen, like some people said, oh, well, you don't take an oath anymore, you have to affirm. Well, technically, I don't think that was necessarily the attack, because an affirmation, is more legally binding than just an oath or a swearing, just so you know. So as we look at what we have from what the framers established, now forgive me for going into this little monologue. Every person from the very beginning when they set these standards, every person that's been born under that and these continuations of these standards and policies, every person born under that has been under the legal obligation, because the Constitution did not create a central, all-powerful government. That's why we're going through the Constitutional Convention. That's why we're going to go through the ratification debates. You're going to understand this to the nth degree, that the states were the ones that had to do the enforcing. The states were the ones that were equally liable in making sure that that Constitution survived, that it was abided by, that it would be followed to the nth degree. Therefore, as they were creating this government and creating this symbiotic relationship, a part of that was establishing the laws and the regulations of the militia. Every state had to have a law that required every able person, and back in those days the standard was, you know, a young man from this age to this age, whatever that was, and it's changed. And Congress has constantly changed that, and now they've included women. That women can be in combat arms. Women can actually, you know, serve. And I don't know if they've mandated that women register for the draft or not. But nevertheless, that's Congress's responsibility in establishing those standards and disciplines and so forth. But as we look at what I just said, this cannot be marginalized. The states are legally bound by the Constitution to ensure that every citizen that is capable be on call and be ready to take up arms and use deadly force to defend and support not President Trump, not the Republican Party, not, you know, the Southern Baptist religion or the faith of Christianity. Our responsibility is to support and defend that Constitution. And how profound and how provident was our Creator in helping inspire to make sure that the one thing that we should all agree upon as citizens of this nation, the one thing that we should all agree upon is adherence to that, the supreme law of the land, as at least at a minimum, if we haven't been perverted in accepting and believing democracy and those other things, and as we discover the truth and start seeing the blessings and benefits from coming from this hybrid constitutional republic, we should all feel even more inclined to endure and support that Constitution. And when I say endure, endure the sufferings, the, you know, slings, arrows, whatever your enemies want to throw at you. We should be standing up and saying, it doesn't matter, we need to abide by the Constitution. Yeah, you may lose some benefits, but we gain our liberty to do anything and everything we want to, and we are going to be responsible and accountable for ourselves. As citizens of states, as citizens of counties, this is the hybrid constitutional republic that literally creates these three forms of government. And in this perspective, we now have the ability to literally separate the wheat from the chaff. And this is really where, you know, Sean and I were talking about, you know, before the show started, you know, what do we need to do? And actually, Sean, you were coming up with questions and you were asking about, well, hold on here. How can we get away with taking the citizenship? I think this was one of your key points. If you had another key point that drove to this, and this was your second, then remind me, because I'm old and, you know, I forgot that far back. So was that not the key point or the key issue that you were bringing up, was the right of a person's religion is paramount to anything and everything?
Well, I don't know if I'd put it that way, but the question originated with, how can you remove citizenship from someone and deport them if the states were in charge of immigration? If the states had the authority over immigration, how can the country deport them? Then we got into the oath of citizenship.
Right.
And I was asking about, how can you deport or remove the citizenship from someone because they are of a certain religion?
Okay.
Because the conundrum is, in that religion, they swear allegiance to their God and to Sharia law.
Right. Okay. So,
and not the Constitution. So there's like a dual affirmation there.
Right. Okay.
You can't serve two masters. You're either one or the other.
Okay. Now, during the ratification phase, we're going to get to this, because I think at that point in time, they didn't realize that one of the byproducts of creating this Constitution, Congress was literally going to create this, I'll call it a trap door, by mandating that if you're going to be a citizen, your only allowable paradigm to operate and function in this nation as a citizen is you must support and defend. You must be able and willing to lay your life down, if required by law, to support and defend that Constitution over everything else. Which means that anybody that comes in and says, I don't care about your Constitution, we want Sharia law and we want our theocracy, then how are they citizens? They have literally taken a legal position in defiance to that law, into that requirement of citizenship. In other words, they instantly, when they say we want Sharia law, we literally are telling us, are telling the world, that they're not citizens. And if they actually swore as citizens, they falsely swore, or they falsely affirmed, because they went in knowing that they had to abjure, they had to abandon all allegiance to anything and everything else when it came to the governing of people superior to that Constitution. The Constitution protects religious freedom. But when the religion is also a governing religion, so this comes to the reason we want to talk about this, and the reason I brought this in, is I had a very interesting conversation with a family member, a nephew, literally about our obligations as citizens and so forth. And as we were talking on the details of all of this, you know, I was helping him understand that out of the annals of mankind and the annals of history of mankind, there have really only been two governments that were established by our Creator's hand. The first government created by our Creator's hand was the rule of judges as Moses brought Israel out of Egypt, right? You agree, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, no, actually in the garden, but I mean, the family was supposed
Okay, so hold on. Just a second here. There are two governing aspects. There is a governing of spirituality and salvation, and then there are the law, the temporal. So you have spiritual and temporal government. And government is the one that actually, you know, starts making decisions on property, whose property, you know, lying, those types of things. And even though in a theocracy, it is entwined in a theocracy, because what they created was a theocracy. And who was ultimately in charge of the judging and all of that? It was the priesthood. In Israel, they had judges, and they also had a prophet. I mean, Moses was the prophet. And so ultimately, when it came down to, nobody could decide who had to make the decision that nobody could make, it came up to Moses. Moses basically was being, as his father-in-law put it, I mean, you're going to kill yourself. If you have to decide every stupid little, you know, contest and controversy over, you know, who, you know, this is my shoe or what have you, which has nothing to do with a person's salvation, maybe the theft or what have you, sins, yeah, maybe. But the point is that there's a temporal governing and there's a spiritual governing. And so they, in a theocracy, you have both. And in a theocracy, everything aligns towards your spiritual salvation. But in a temporal government, the first temporal government that was established was literally established by the rule of judges that then migrated into the rule of kings, right? And so now you actually had a, even though it was still a theocracy, because it was a theocracy, it wasn't an amalgamation of different religions and different faiths like we have in America, right? So it was all, you know, this one acceptable package, just like Islam. So you have this monolithic theocracy that is both governing the spirituality as well as, you know, who gets land, who land disputes, those types of things. Things that, you know, we kind of covered in common law, because the birth of common law came out of that. Anyway, the first time the divine hand of providence that actually created a governing system that was strictly temporal, that was not necessarily, you know, based on the theocracy itself, he gave us an ability to create a free market government that would allow dissension and or differences of faiths and so forth. That wasn't open in Israel. That wasn't there. And so this was a very unique temporal government. He still governs the church, and he still governs all things from on high. He is the ultimate sovereign. But he gave us the ability to self-govern in this constitution. This is the only nation that has ever had this privilege. Only. And so what we have is a temporal government today. And so when we look at the good Christians out there, they think, oh, well, everything's got to be biblical. No, it doesn't have to be biblical. What it has to be is it has to be based on that higher law. Because you got to remember that when Christ took the Ten Commandments, he basically merged them into two. He did that. And this comes down to the one of many as far as the religion goes, because I believe this is a fundamental tenet that even Madison articulated this. I'm not the author. I don't have the mental capacity that some of these men had. But Madison pointed out in the Remonstrance of Religion, as well as the Essay on Property. We're going to go into a break right there. But when we come back, I will talk about, really, there is a billion forms of religions out there. And how that is, so we'll be right back, because the Constitution recognizes and actually supports that multitude. But we'll be right back after this. Sorry for the... I hate it when we have an interruption in a deep moment like that. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so where I was and what I was trying to talk about, in Madison's Remonstrance on Religion, and we're going to cover these documents in the near future. Once we get through the ratification debates, we will actually go back and cover Madison's Remonstrance of Religion and setting up some of these other key paradigms that were the foundation of this hybrid constitutional republic. Because as Madison points out, and this is GR's simplifying, because when you read it, some people have a hard time understanding the vernacular, the way he talks, what have you. So this is just GR's breaking it down into GR's simpleton language. That you can walk into, because it wasn't about the Anglican faith. It wasn't about the Baptist faith, the congressional faith, the different faiths, the five different faiths that were present in America at the time of the Constitution. It wasn't really about the faith. It was about the individuals, because that's what Madison was pointing out in the Remonstrance of Religion, that you can go into a church, and even though the majority of the members of the church agree on most all, 90%, it is those things of individual interpretation, individual revelation, whatever, that differentiates us. And technically, there's nobody that really thinks alike. We have a different view on different doctrines, maybe very, very similar, but because of our experience, we see things from a different angle. The point is that, and this is always the tendency of theocracies, that once you've put to waste all other doctrines that are competing, you're never in there. You actually will start finding tyrants coming to power in theocracy, because this was how Europe was constantly being, you know, I'll just say in war and in this hate. They were trapped in hate because they hated dissenters. They hated anybody that were in their own flock that thought a little differently. Look at what the Puritans did when a few people started actually proselyting different concepts out of the scriptures or a different view. The Puritans out of Massachusetts, they created two new states and two new religions because literally it rose up in their ranks a dissenting thought or a thought that differed from them. And they said, we will have none of that. And they cast them out because that's what they wanted. They wanted that tight control over the thought. And so the concept of this true free market of religion for an individual to be able to, as long as you're adhering to the laws and not defying the rights of others, you should have the ability. Your individual rights always end where another person's begins. So you may have this religious right of, you know, creating, you know, this art that really speaks to you. But if it's obscene, then you can't put that out in public based on your religious right. We do have the ability to create laws that say obscenity shall not be in the view of children. We have the we can do those things. That was the whole point of how enlightened we were as a society. As we started stripping away these fundamental disciplines and laws that were helping keep those guardrails on the edges of our road, this is how we've started going off the road. But back to what I was saying, this idea and this concept of having the ability for a person to, you know, get up and walk away from a church and start creating their own church, and they're, you know, based on their own revelation. And if people decide to join it, we're not going to go kill them. We're not going to drag them into the street and stone them, because they have that right. The Constitution protects your right of the expression of religion as well, as well as the expression of thought, the freedom of the press, speech, and so forth. So when you get to a point where your religion becomes an enemy to the rule of law for everybody else to have those rights, freedoms, and everything else, and you want to put aside the Constitution and make your theocracy the rule of law, then you have created an institution that is contrary and in direct conflict with the laws of this nation and the laws of the land. You cannot persist. You cannot exist here anymore. You have the right to do that. And so there are steps. And I think this is getting back to answering Sean. There are these steps. So if somebody actually, like communists, taking from others to give to, you know, taking from those who have and giving to those who have not, is communist. It is not within our governing doctrine. It is an antithetical doctrine to freedom and the consequences that come with that freedom. Therefore, anybody that is applying communism is in direct defiance of the Constitution of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, regardless of how they're getting there. This is the beauty, because believe it or not, communism, if they actually were just out there saying, hey, you know, we all should support the idea of taking from others and giving to others, then the process of doing that constitutionally and legitimately would be amending the Constitution to do that. But the good Lord gave us a nation and a republic that requires three-fourths, and we now have what I would consider the serious block on insanity. Maybe in the original 13 states, they might have actually thought of and created some amendments that would have been just disastrous. But their focus, fortunately, they were divided over slavery so that they didn't come up with these, you know, these imbecilic ideas of trying to create laws of, like, you know, Robin Hood, stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. Because had they amended the Constitution, then it would have been legitimate. But today, there's no way they can take your guns. They can create laws, but those laws are in direct violation. They're unconstitutional. Those laws are what we call the color of law. They're the pretense of law. There's no authority for them for that law to even exist. And so when we look at what they've been doing, the communists have been doing, they've been using the pretense of law to implement their strategies. They've never amended the Constitution to establish a national minimum wage, or even, and I've yet to see a state, folks, go read your state constitution. Tell me, come back to me and say, hey, GR, the state of Alabama, because I don't have Alabama, so I haven't looked at it, but if you live in Alabama, contact me and say, hey, I looked, and we actually were dumb enough to establish a right for the government to establish a minimum wage and to regulate our labor. Wow. That would be the first state, because I've looked. The state of Washington, the communist state of Washington, even California, does not have the power to create the minimum wage. And yet, they're using it as a tool, a destructive tool, to decimate anybody and everybody existing, to basically push, you know, the middle class into poverty. because you cannot retire. You cannot live there because labor is going to quickly eclipse you. If you started and you, you know, began your career and working with minimum wage being under a dollar and you ended up retiring while minimum wage was still under $10, now, as minimum wage in these communist states are going to 10, 20 and moving up to 30, as the cost of inflation, because they're literally inflating everything. They're inflating labor, which inflates the currency as well. So the point is that the communists, you know, what they've done this all unconstitutionally. And ergo, we don't, it's not a law against communism, it's a law against the Constitution. So tell me if this makes sense, Sean. When they create a law that they don't have the authority, they're in direct violation. See, the communists, they don't care. This is what the, this is what Congress was doing. This is what all these, you know, over the course of the past two centuries, what all these people were doing was trying to inflict law that was not based on anything, not based on enumerated power. So the trying to create the Department of Transportation, the Department of, you know, the Interior, the Department of Home, Agriculture, Labor, all these things that they've been creating, those powers aren't delegated. And ergo, if they haven't been delegated, then help me out here. Why is it that we're allowing them to exist? Because it's really our responsibility to actually hold government within those bounds of authorization or within the enumerated powers. If you're not keeping them there, then it's your fault that your state's going to crap. And if your state has become so enabled and so empowered that they are literally going down the path of what I would call self-destruction, then I would actually say you need to stand up and use the First Amendment petitions. You should have been doing this in the first place, using First Amendment petitions by educating people to prove that you've got people in government that are exercising powers that are not legitimate. Because that right there, folks, is the one thing that just does not settle in any good red-blooded American stomach. We can't digest, we can't accept the idea when people assume power and start waging these wars. They've taught us that as long as the Democrats, there's enough Democrats that agree, they can create any law that they want. As long as the Republicans are in power, they have enough of them to agree in creating a law that they can do anything and everything they want. Our requirement of holding them to the state constitution has gone out the window and went out the window a long, long time ago. It went out the window before the Supreme Court dismantled your state government and said your counties don't mean anything anymore. This is where we are. But back to the citizenship. We have a responsibility of ensuring that citizens, and it's, you know, do we need to have what's a good word for it? I want to call it a NARC, but, you know, a neighborhood watch where we look for insurgents and so forth. It's in everybody's best interest to actually come to an agreement. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. So you come to this agreement of realizing the importance of what a citizen is supposed to be doing. If you don't agree with taking up arms, if you don't agree to holding government and supporting and defending the Constitution, holding the government accountable to the Constitution, and making sure that our Constitution is protected from enemies foreign and domestic, then, you know, you're wasting your time listening to the show, because that's the whole focus of the show. But I know you're not. I know that you're looking at this and going, okay, I can chew on this. All you need to do is help everybody learn and appreciate the true meaning of a citizen's responsibility. And if they actually start understanding that because you should be able to walk down your street with a bullhorn and, you know, point it at the house, you know, you better start waking up because you're the problem. Until we, the people, start holding people accountable to the Constitution, you're the problem. And so I honestly think that, you know, it should be okay to bully people, because bottom line, They're in the closet of not supporting the Constitution. We can't allow that to happen. We can't allow that to happen with our government, because this is how governments are lost. And I think everybody has to realize that what is the danger of supporting individual liberty and individual sovereignty? You still get to worship, you know, whatever faith you want to worship, as long as you're supporting the Constitution. You get to do, you know, whatever career you want to do. It doesn't mean you can't be in some, you know, evil industry like pornography. You know, if your community gets to a point where they outlaw that, then that's fine. And you know what? It would be great if states actually started creating laws that don't allow internet pornography. Because if the states actually wanted to regulate certain things such as obscenities, they could do that. And they could actually create a constitutional amendment if they wanted to, but we wouldn't want to do that. All you need to do is basically say, we want to actually force this, you know, this block that no pornography comes into the state. I'm swimming in a rat hole on you, Sean, but this is a good one. Because a state, if the people of the state actually put it in their constitution that pornography will not be allowed in the state, that's the supreme law of the state. Now, does this defy a person's right of speech or anything else? Not if it's in your constitution. Does it deny the individual privileges and immunities of an individual? No, because a person can still do their obscenities in their own home. It's just not allowed in public or on the internet. Why? Because the internet is a public domain. The internet is where kids can actually get and actually be there. So because this was the suggestion in the 1990s to solve access from pornography permeating into every household. Instead of creating a .com or a .org or what have you, it would be .xxx. And that state would be able to stop all routing and everything else and any network device, whether it be XM Sirius or what have you, that if they were, you know, broadcasting where that would actually go in and violate the state laws, then they would either have to come up with filters to ensure on the receiving end that they would not receive that. They're the ones that would be obligated. But this is how we can stop this crap.
Yes, sir.
And I, you know what? When I go down this rat hole, I just try to dive in, get wet, and kind of show you that this blue water, this green-looking water looks different on my skin. I'm just showing you something because I didn't get into all of the nitinoid details that you're a man of capable of doing that. And I love that because you're going to come up with questions. Well, how about this and what about that and blah, blah, blah. And an enlightened society has a right of being able, if the people want to have an enlightened society, and they want to create disciplines, they want to create guards on their roads. I mean, you know, where are the people today standing up and saying, hey, we got to take away these safety standards on the roads with these guardrails and these center dividers? Right? I mean, nobody is asking for, you know, taking away these safety guidelines when it comes to traveling on the road. Society has a right to enlighten itself to help it actually contain and continue, I'll just use the term ascend to higher levels of consciousness, higher levels of productivity, higher levels of thinking. And the only way you can get there as a society is you have to start elevating. And I understand also that there are physical, you know, differences between, you know, brain power, people that have an IQ that's a different level. But I truly believe that most all of people are able to go beyond their capabilities. I believe that the mind, if we tap into it, we can actually start challenging what we would call IQ levels so that we could actually get to and open up people's minds to where, you know, everybody, I'm really on thin ice when I say this. That, you know, every person should be able to understand a combustion engine, even women. And so, because there's lots of women, they just don't care about those things. And I could say the same thing on the man side, that every man should understand the nuances of, you know, how to put makeup on, you know, why the art of that. Maybe. These are just things, and some of it's technical, some of it's just artistic, some of it's feelings, some of it is very, very technical and specific. But the point is that having the ability to understand doesn't mean you necessarily need to know it. I can admit to you that there are several things that I have not wasted my time in learning, because being the master of my domain, I have the ability to focus on those things that I want to focus on. We all do. And so when we start expanding certain things, why do I know about combustion? Because it's important. Why do I know about, I'll just say energy. Why do I know about communications? Because these things are important. And, what goes into bread, yeast, flour, what have you, those are simple, but certain foods and so forth. I used to chef, so I mean, understand the ingredients and the process, I kind of understand, so that's maybe not a good path. I'm trying to figure out some things that, I just never learned. I just never cared and never learned about. A basic marksmanship, I learned because of the Marine Corps. But be honest with you, had I not been a Marine, I would not have taken the time to do it. Maybe for self-defense or what have you, but for the most part, I would much rather be learning of understanding things and how to solve problems. Sometimes, having a gun on your side really solves the problem quickly for you, right?
Depends on the problem, absolutely.
but there are certain types of problems that it's nice to have the gun if you need it to solve that problem, just as a defense. Just to basically say, are you serious you want to do this? No, we're good. Anyway, when it comes down to it, folks, I cannot marginalize the importance of understanding citizenship, importance of understanding, because let's get back to what Sean was talking about. I got 6 minutes. The states are really responsible of immigration, and they're responsible of making citizens by the standards that the federal government's created in a uniform rule of naturalization, that they need to comply to those standards. The federal government has the ability to say anybody that is Islamic in faith cannot and no way will ever, until Islam migrates away from its desires of demanding a theocracy entwined with its temporal government. In other words, joining their spiritual government to the temporal government. Because that's why I went down this whole path of talking about a spiritual government and a temporal government. We don't have them entwined. We've created by the hand of the divine creator. He gave us a system that actually makes it seem like it is non-denominational. It doesn't even need to be Christian. Because it really isn't. It is about individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And it is all about liberty. Literally. That's why, when we look at what are the components of liberty, I talk about, free agency. It also entwined with responsibility and accountability. When you're living in a state, we don't live in a state of freedom. We live in a state of liberty. You have a choice. You have the power and the ability to make the decision. If it's the wrong decision, we have laws and we're coming after you. At least we're supposed to. And when you actually put these things on the table and people start listening, they start understanding, wow, this, that really does make sense. This is just amazing. How come we weren't taught this? Because if you were taught these things, then you wouldn't accept what they were doing. And that was the whole point, making us illiterate, making us stupid, and actually making us carnal and trying to drive us into a more carnal man makes us far more worthless or incapable of fighting at a higher level. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So
it is a plan, just like you lay out in your writing and in your on your website. It is a plan. This is about good and evil. This is about control versus liberty and tyranny versus liberty.
Yes,
that's what it comes down to. And I think part of the problem that we have currently is that we have such a high standard of living that is taken completely for granted by most of the majority of the population. They're not put in a position to have to consider these things because they are not living under frontal tyranny. You know, it's just that their rights and their progeny's future in liberty is being eroded around them. And when that day comes that we flip over to tyranny, it's going to be too late for these people to wake up and realize what's been done to them. You know, and there's a whole bunch of useful idiots that are being manipulated right now. And I've heard people call it suicidal empathy, to where for your own ego's virtuousness, you have empathy for all these people, and you know everybody should have what I have, and it should be fair. But that's a utopian ideal that is being pushed on them to behind the scenes completely undermine what we enjoy and what's brought us to this standard of living that we take for granted. And one quote that I love, I think about every day, is the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Yep.
That's where we've lost our way.
Yes. So, you know, it's I don't want to be necessarily a contrarian with what you said, but as I look at what they're doing and the tyranny that's around the corner, as I see it, it's just going to be a sleight of hand. If you look and you understand the level of tyranny we're living under. So by definition, what is tyranny? Go ahead, Google it, look it up. Because when you look at the current webbing, the current fabric of government regulations and government involvement in our lives, then you start seeing the magnitude of tyranny already. So when they actually take control, or when they actually change the color of control, let's just call it color, going from blue to red, or I'll just say the moral, going from liberal to conservative, progressive to conservative. It's a sleight of hand. This is kind of why I stated that America, I've said this before, America has a propensity of being conservative. The majority of the people really are conservative. Over 50% want to be able to have people held accountable. So when all of a sudden the boom falls, when they literally come after us, you know, it's going to be, you know, the flavor of what you want. It's going to be that conservative boom, and everybody's going to say, yay, we're winning, when we've absolutely, at that point in time, that's when we've lost. So this is why, you know, the fooling of America is not the fooling of the outright, you know, evil, you know, pedophilia, all that type of stuff. It's we're going to win on what we would consider good, righteous positions, and we will be subjugated that way. Anyway, great conversation. I appreciate you poking me, Sean. I'm Jared Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.